Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. And today is Tuesday, August 4th, 2015. We've got some great guests today, and we'll be talking about hops. And this story goes pretty deep. Ben Keen from Beer Advocates here.
What's up, Jimmy?
My summer co-host, dude. This is the summer of Ben.
Two more weeks.
And the summer of Goza. And Jeff O'Neill, our buddy brewer, who's got some news for us about his new brewery.
I think so.
How are you, man?
I'm well, but Ben, I haven't met you before.
Let's meet. How's it going? I live near Ithaca Brewing these days.
Oh, do you?
Your old stomping grounds.
Where do you live?
In Ithaca.
What part of town?
In Cayuga Heights.
Oh, that's great.
Country Club Road.
All right. It's a nice neighborhood.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot cooler than it is down here this time of year.
I bet. This is the nice time of year up there.
I don't know
it's
what I'm doing.
It's a secret time.
It's all because of my love for Jimmy that
that's
I'm hanging out.
It's a secret time. All the students are gone.
All the
swimming holes are cleared out.
Yeah.
And shady, right?
There's no lines for beer.
What are you thinking?
I don't know.
Get back up there.
Jeff, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, Jimmy.
And we got John Siegel, the guy we've been waiting for a long time to come back. We had you on 3 years ago.
Jimmy, how are you?
And today we're finally going to really talk about hops. And we got Jeff and Ben and John, so you guys take it away. So what's going on? It's the 50th anniversary of something.
Yeah, it's the 50th anniversary of Fritz Maytag buying Anchor Brewing Company in 1965, August 2nd.
Wow.
So it's a pretty amazing thing that he did back then. And that's really created everything that's happened today. So it's really a pretty amazing thing. So it's a great anniversary. 50 years is a long time. And he's done so much for this industry and really influenced so many great brewers, so it's really, really a good day.
Did I ever tell you the story of the letter that I have from Fritz?
No, what?
So when I was a home brewer and I lived in the Bay Area in the late '90s, and first started sending out resumes to breweries, I sent out resumes to like 40 different breweries. I got one response, and it was from Fritz Maytag on Anchor Brewing Stationery.
Yeah,
just classy all the way. Yep. It was. You know, dear Jeff, a lot of people don't realize this, but Anchor Brewery only has 67 employees,
right,
and we're not expecting to add or lose anyone this year.
Yeah, he was very good that
and
way.
And I
very
just
proper.
Dug that out of my like
that's awesome. Yeah,
my chest.
There's a backstory here. So
class,
going back, John, you're going to tell us a little bit about your family.
Yes.
and the hop range.
Okay, so three generation hop farm starting in Malone, New York, upstate New York. My grandfather had 100 acres in Malone, also 100 acres in Grandview, Washington. 59, we rolled up trellis in upstate New York because of blue mold and heptachlor. A lot of New York State just stopped growing hops in the late 50s. Went out to Grandview, and my grandfather passed very young, and my father took over. And really, he was kind of a maverick, really cool guy. He met and became good friends with Fritz Maytag, but also with Chuck Zimmerman. And Chuck Zimmerman is really historically one of the top hop breeders in the U.S., and he really was the mentor to Jason Peralt. And Jason Peralt is the guy who's now probably the best hop breeder in the world. You know, Mosaic, and others that he's bred.
And Martin worked with him, too.
And Martin Ramos, our ranch manager, also worked with Chuck Zimmerman. I knew Chuck as a young guy. I worked at Anchor for a year out of college and went to work for my dad in the hop business. And
so let's go back. So
I'm going to go back.
You guys,
okay.
You're in New York.
Yeah.
In Malone.
I skipped the generation to me. I'm sorry.
Laurel Ingle Wilder's series, that's where the Farmer Boys stories were set. So
right.
I know there's some history up there.
So Chuck and my dad, back then in the middle 60s, the U.S.
You didn't
hop
know
business,
that, did you, Jeff?
I did not.
The U.S. hop
How
business was clusters and Brewer's Gold and basic kettle hops, and all the noble Roma hops came from Germany. They got a better price. And my dad always believed that there was a real role for the U.S. hop growers to grow aroma hops. And Chuck found a variety called 56013. It was originally developed in 1950s By Stan Brook, I think his name was, in Oregon. And 56013 kind of languished in the late 60s in Oregon, didn't do anything with it. Chuck, in his Prosser station for the U.S. hop growers for Washington State, got some rhizomes. My dad loved them in his nursery in Prosser, planted 3 acres, and that variety is now Cascade. In 68, my dad went out on his own and really just talked to brewers. At that time, there were only big brewers, Coors and Anheuser-Busch, et cetera. And it took about 4 years worth of work, and finally, Coors Brewing Company in 1972 ordered Cascade hops from the Siegel Ranch. So the Siegel Ranch really is the first place where the Cascade hop was commercially cultivated. In 74, my dad and Fritz became good friends, and Fritz launched Liberty Ale, which is really, if you're thinking about a benchmark beer that really influenced the IPA today, Liberty Ale is really the beer. And that was brewed with and dry hopped with Siegel Ranch.
74?
74, yeah.
Siegel Ranch.
That's the year you were born? Yeah. Well, all I know is in 72, I had a good vacation because my dad sold 1 million roots to other hop growers in a cooperative. And that was really the reason why Cascade took hold, as my dad was able to then propagate roots, which he made money on, but he also let them out because it was a public variety. And today, the Cascade variety is still the largest variety planted in Washington State. There's 4,000 acres. Now, the fastest growing ones are, of course, the Select Botanical, you know, the Mosaics, the Simcoes, and Centennial, actually, which is a public variety that's doing very well. So that's a quick history. And then I got involved. Well,
now we're going to take a step back. So Jeff, for you as a brewer, you know, tell us how you got introduced to working with certain hops, because, you know, you're noted for your hoppy beers.
Well, this is a great tie-in to what John was saying. Like, when I was first getting interested in brewing, I lived in San Francisco. I was drinking Liberty Ale, and there wasn't a lot else like it. You know, Racer 5 was starting to show up, beers like that. The Anderson Valley IPA was out there then, and I worked at the 20 Tank Brewery. We've talked about that a number of times. But that was one of the first places making, you know, hop forward, you know, beers like that.
Yeah.
That focused on single aroma varieties.
Oh, that's great, man.
And
cheers
those
to
beers,
you guys.
You know, those beers were primitive relative to the hoppy beers we have today.
Well, then also a guy named Ken Grossman came
Sierra
in.
Paleo,
you know, Sierra and
Nevada
Liberty
Paleo were kind of like...
Are, is the next
those thing. Are siblings. Those
right,
two
they
beers,
really
so.
Are.
So was your family selling to everyone like Sierra Nevada?
You know, actually, no. It was Anchor, and then... no, we didn't. We've never done business with the folks at Sierra Nevada, not because they are not interested in our hops, but it's just the timing hasn't been right. But they're a fantastic place and the nicest people. So,
so as you grew up, so for a while, what you ended up working at Anchor Steam?
I did. Out of college, I spent a year there. I was the first tour guide that Fritz hired, which was kind of a big deal because, you know, he was giving the tours, and his secretary, Linda Rowe, more than a secretary, she really was running the office there. And so they hired me, and I worked in packaging in the mornings from 7:30 till noon, and then after lunch, I'd conduct tours in the afternoon. I spent a year there, and then my dad asked me to go to the hop ranch to start working. So that was the end of my brewing career.
Did they have that that upstairs bar then?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
That's been there?
Yes.
That's been there for...
19... I'm going to date myself.
30 years?
I was there in 1980 to 81. I worked at Anchor. Yeah.
That's and for those that haven't been there, it's a truly...
It's a beautiful place.
It's a singular brewery.
Yeah.
One of the best brewery bars anywhere.
Yep.
Beautiful.
So Anchor Brewing. And Ben, where are we going to go with the show? Because we're trying to talk about hops.
Where are we going to go with the show today?
We're up to 1981, but what are we drinking right now?
Well, speaking of hops and New York, and John, your family's roots in New York, I brought a rather new beer from Omegon called Hop State New York, and it is made with 100%. It's made with hops grown in New York: Cascade, Chinook, and Nugget. Omegon is located on a hop farm. I think they have an interest in seeing more New York hops on the market. And so this is their, I guess, little stick to poke farmers and say, hey, we'll buy it if
we'll
you grow it.
Yeah.
And I believe that their intention is to, they released it, I believe, in June of this year. And I think their intention is to put out a new hop state every year going forward.
It's a nice beer.
Very delicious.
But it's not that hoppy.
It's skews toward hoppy.
Yeah.
But how do you, when I think hoppy, Jeff, I think about like your IPAs.
Well, like this is a more traditional style of beer. Like the state, the reality of growing hops in New York State is it's not an ideal climate. So when you, the years that you get something that you can make a beer of this kind of quality is a relatively new development. Yeah. And, this beer is actually, I had it a couple times before. It's made by my buddy Mike McManus, who is their like R&D brewer there. Their innovation manager, I think is his title. And he's had a hand in a lot of the newer hoppy beers coming out of there. Hop House and the Nirvana IPA. Yeah. Which are really a new transition for Omegang to focus on, for sure.
Yeah, departure for them, yeah.
But it's really interesting that they're making these beers with their house yeast. So every beer from Omegang is made with the same house yeast, and it's a really versatile tool that they have.
You know, up in Cooperstown, we've been up a few times for Belgian Comes to Cooperstown event.
It's this weekend.
Yeah, it is, and
it's coming weekend. Yeah.
I'm bummed I'm not going this year. But they had the great farm museum where they have that little, it's like the little patch of hops and the old hop drying. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that, John? I mean, look, that was like supposed to be 1842. You know, New York State.
New York State, in the 1840s, there's 50 million pounds of hops being grown in New York State. It really was when the country was really the East Coast, and West Coast wasn't really there yet. And it really is interesting. They used to have ads in newspapers in New York City getting people to come out to upstate New York as a summer vacation to pick hops and kind of have fun. You know, during the Victorian era, you know, it's a place where you could kind of let your Victorian thing go and go out to the fields, pick hops, hang out by the campfire, drink some beer. And that's how they got hop pickers. And it was hard to get them because back then you'd have to pull the vines down. They were grown on poles. You have to pull them and they'd have to hand pick them. So it was really a very, very, and I don't know if you know about hops, but they can scratch your skin.
Irritating.
Yeah. So it's hard work. And so it was a way for people in the New York City in the 1840s and 50s to get out and actually get out to the clean air of upstate New York.
Talking about prickly hops. So the first time I was ever on a hop farm, I instinctively took it, crushed it, and put it in my mouth. So what would happen to someone if they did that?
You're not the first. And it's usually an incredible explosion of bitterness. I mean, that's what you're basically getting. And the next question is, am I going to get high off of it? Because they think it's connected to cannabis, which is, sorry, there's no CBD or THC in it. So sorry to say that's not going to happen to you. So.
But you guys, as hop growers, so your family's built your whole life around this.
Yes.
So the science, the agriculture.
Well, we do our best. We have very good ranch managers that have helped us throughout the generations. And farming is really a challenge. And I always make sure that our friends try and support local farmers for any produce they buy because it is a very challenging business, and we're subject to so many variables. So. It's every year's a new year. Every year's a new chapter at the Siegel Ranch, and we're always striving to grow the best hops in the world. That's the goal. But every year, there's always twists and turns in that path. So
Jeff, when you were at Ithaca, for example, Ithaca Flower Power, how did you come up with that recipe?
Well, that was a time when some of the new varieties were emerging. It had a lot of the what they call the proprietary hop varieties, Simcoe, Amarillo, Citra once it was introduced. And it was a way to play around a little bit because, at Ithaca at the time, that beer was a seasonal. So if it wasn't the same as last year's version, that was, maybe more forgivable than the flagship beer. But then when we when it really started to gain some momentum, we locked down. John and I were just talking about this earlier, before the shortage in 2008, I had been lucky enough to get to know people like John and gave me an idea of what the real supply side of it is, what some of the realities are.
Which is a big deal.
A lot of brewers deal only with a broker type. Mm-hmm. And you get a perspective from a broker that you don't get from a farmer and vice versa. So I was lucky enough to have secured enough of those proprietary varieties at that time when stuff got short. And John and I were talking about this earlier. There was a year that prices really spiked fivefold. Is that right? 500%.
About fivefold.
And we were somewhat insulated from that because I had written contracts on it. And it allowed us to really make a bunch more of that beer than we had before. And there were shortages of that style of beer, that really punchy, intense.
IPA style. I mean, there are breweries that couldn't do the recipes because the hops weren't there, or they had to change
some of those real like tropical citrus flavors. It's hard to get them any other way.
Right. All right, got to a good start here talking about hops and good people. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
In 1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. What a day, man. It's summer in New York City. It's hot, cold, thunderstorms, and we got hops and some good guys in studio. And I'm wiped out, man. It's been an intense summer. We had July Goover month, and it was 31 days of beer, and now it's like the summer of Goza. And Ben, you know, you're keeping up with me, man. We had a great time this summer.
It's busy, but it's a fun kind of busy, I'd say. And it's probably wise to ease back with the lower ABV beers like Goza after starting off strong, you know.
Well, we got some great news here, you know. So our good buddy Jeff O'Neill, we've got a little bit of news on his new brewery. And I'm going to take it away, Jeff. So you find a location.
Sure.
And
Yeah, we finally got a lease done at this wonderful historical factory site in Rockland County. It's called the Garner Arts Center. And it's like a pre-Prohibition, pre-Civil War era factory complex with a number of other artists and artisans as tenants. And it's a really cool spot. We're going to be able to take advantage of some really unique features that the site has. It's an old brick building that we're going to modernize. And
congratulations, man.
I'm really excited about it.
No, everybody's been asking. Everybody wants to know. So Industrial Arts.
Industrial Arts Brewing Company.
It's going to be in Garnerville, New York. It's pretty awesome.
So what's your... I mean, every construction project takes longer and costs more than
well,
you think it will.
Yeah, a lot of the fabrication of the equipment is already underway.
Okay.
The brew house is being built in Germany and should be finished in October. And fermentation tanks are going to be done, actually, in the middle of September.
Oh, okay.
So we need to get the buildings ready. We need to cut floor drains and do install new flooring and get the, you know, the spaces cleaned up and do some demo. But it's wide open kind of warehouse factory space that doesn't need... I don't need to build a building. Yeah.
Cool. So sometime in 2016.
Yeah, hopefully before next summer.
Cool.
Yeah.
And what are like things you're looking for when you're looking for a building? Are there certain ceiling heights you need? Or?
Yeah, you need. Well, you need it all, right? You need ceiling height. You need a loading dock.
But like, how high ceilings did you need? Like, what was the minimum?
So these ceilings are about 18 feet high, which is a little low for what I want to do, and we actually have to design the fermentation vessels to fit under that space to be the size that we need. So we can only fit 100 barrel tanks in that space. So that will, you know, we'll have to acquire more square footage to grow rather than, you know,
growing
bigger. Yeah, it'll be more difficult to grow vertically. But it's a site that can sustain us for a long time, I think.
It's a beautiful historic building. I mean, tell about the history, because it's a long
Yeah, it was a dye works, like a print factory. I've heard it was a textile factory. Later on, it was a steam generating plant. After the Depression, that was how they got up and going. They were making steam, and they would give free making electricity, and they would give free utilities to anyone who would set up shop there. So they've had a history of kind of, you know, industrial tenants and it's a really cool yeah. spot.
It's a really cool spot.
So since you know you've been a brewer a long time, and you're setting up your your brewery, are there certain visions you have for it in terms of like green or what the flow of
Well, every if there's 4,000 breweries in the U.S. now, there are 4,000 different ways to do it, right? So everybody's got their own unique perspective and philosophy on how to do it, and in some ways, that has been a fluid situation for me. Like, I don't know if when I first started envisioning opening this brewery, it was as ambitious as it is now. But at some point, I started to look more toward how it would scale and how growth could happen. And, one of the symptoms of having worked in growing craft breweries for a while is going through those painful growing, like tripping over yourself for a year because you didn't think that you'd have to bring two tractor trailers there in a day.
Yeah.
Like, it's just little things like that that can really add up and cost you a lot of money in the end. So, I think I'm lucky enough to be able to say, like, this is not really a typical brewery startup. We're starting up with a lot of technology.
So what are some of the things that you want that you're going to get?
Well, we have a really great flow through in this site where raw materials will come in at one end of the site and finished product will leave like maybe 300 or 400 yards away from where the brew house is. So there's a really great sort of natural flow through the site, and it's actually even follows a gradient on the land there. So it's kind of downhill through the process. There's a nice loading dock situation, large warehouse. A lot of cool, like, it's kind of a Dickensian factory type of thing. Like, there are alleys with brick paths, and yeah, it's just a really unique
place. You could have a movie shoot there. It's really kind of neat.
We're going to have a lot of space. It's going to be a really, it's going to really, we'll have a lot of events there that'll really occupy this space well, I think.
There's plenty of parking.
It's a
cool place.
And, you have to drive to get there, but once you're there, I think we'll have an easy time making people feel really comfortable. So a lot of it, honestly, to answer your question, long story short, it evolves, like, based on the site and the circumstance, and it has been...
And what's one? Is there one toy?
Moving target for me.
Is there one toy that you're buying that you always wanted?
Well, the brew house is really something else, and that was going to go in no matter what we were going to do. It's a we talked about this last time I was on. There's a lot of bells and whistles that are designed to maintain hop aroma. Let's just put it that way. There's some unique process engineering that we're doing that we can expose wort to hops at a lower temperature than you usually can,
which would be awesome. It's going to be very, very good.
We think so.
Yeah, I think it's going to be great. Good for the hops.
Yeah, and of course, John. We're going to use a lot of Siegel Ranch hops, and I'm really excited to say, and we talk about this a lot. He's trying to get away from being responsible for pelleting of hops, right? And so I'm going to use. His hops has whole flowers and we'll really get them raw and relatively pure. And
I mean, as a hop grower, that's the biggest compliment when someone will just take your bale and just split it open and measure and put it into the brew house. I mean, it's fine as far as pellets are concerned. It's certainly, it's a good way to brew and there are a lot of advantages.
And we'll use a lot of pellets as
well.
They're
going to use pellets as well, but they're going to be using whole leaf, which, that's Anchor. There's a few breweries
Sierra.
That do Sierra, Victory. Only a few that are really... Actually, North Coast uses some of our hops from our farm in whole leaf and pellets. So, but they're very few. So it warms my heart that Jeff is going to go back to...
Yeah, doing it in a really intentional way where we'll be able to really control that exposure and not... Like, honestly, most small brewers don't use whole hops because they're a pain. They clog.
It's true.
They're hard to use in a process that has narrow piping and valves, and there's just a lot of cleanup involved when you use whole hops. But we're setting it up to make it a little bit more manageable, to be able to bring them through the process, discharge them, I think it'll give us a different tool than a lot of other brew houses have. And I think it'll drive some unique character into our beers.
Speaking of John's hops, we're drinking. Yes, beer made, which I brought now, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is, I brought it because you can't get it in New York right now. It's the New Belgium Brewery's Ranger IPA, and my sister Jean was kind enough to bring some up from Maryland. And the reason I also brought it, it's brewed with Simcoe's, Centennial, and Cascade, I think, in the boil. And then it's dry hopped with only Siegel Ranch Cascade. So we're really honored to have our high oil Cascades as a dry hop in the Ranger. It's a lovely IPA. I've always liked it. I think it's a very balanced product. Has a nice malt bill as well as great aromas and great flavors.
New package?
Yeah, it's a new package. But I just brought it because you can't get it in New York, so I thought it'd be kind of novel to have it.
So what are the flavor profile? I mean, this is a little softer than some of the IPAs we're used to now, but it tastes like beer. So somebody help me.
So descriptive.
I hope so.
This beer tastes like beer.
Well, it doesn't taste like hops. You know, it tastes like beer.
Oh, I don't know. This is a beer that skews towards hoppy.
Yeah, I think it's
not overly bitter though.
No,
it's maybe right in line with. It might be even less bitter than.
So that maybe when I talk about hops, I should be talking about bitterness then. Is that what I should? No.
Yeah.
That's just one aspect.
Yeah.
And I think actually that's maybe what I'm trying to describe and not doing well at is, I want to make really, the intention is to make really hoppy beers while controlling the bitterness and keeping the bitterness low. Because for me, bitterness can really limit drinkability a lot of times.
Well, we're having a discussion in the car, and I won't mention any breweries, but you know, there are a lot of great IPAs and double IPAs out there that are so hoppy. And as a hop grower, of course, we want you to use 3 or 4 or 5 pounds per barrel. But you know, sometimes after one pint, the IBUs are so big that you really just, you're sated. You're done. You just, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that's fine if that's the experience you want. But I think there are a lot of brewers out there that are looking towards more balance and having more than one beer. And I think there's a huge market for that as well. It's certainly fine to have a beer that's, you know, going to knock you out, but, you know, I might not have a second pint. And so it's just the style you want a beer or a brew, you know.
Yeah, what do you think about the shift that I would say has happened somewhat recently towards hoppy beers versus bitter beers? Because I do think you see more of them, and, you know, if people have thrown around the term East Coast IPA, in opposition to the really intensely bitter West Coast IPAs.
It's like bringing in the rap music, right?
Yeah,
right,
exactly. There's sort of some gang warfare. No, but more seriously, what do you guys think about, is this something...
We have good music in the break, John.
Is this something you have noticed? You're talking about, you see there's potential and a market for these... beers?
I think there's a market for all types of beers and all types of beer styles. I mean, I think that if you go back in history, if you look at, you know, Stone and you look at Ballast Point and you look at Green Flash, those are certainly styles that come from the San Diego area, mm-hmm. and their beers tend to be a bit more bitter or hoppy, or however you want to describe it, versus Long Trail or others that are more malt-centric. I think all beers are good and some are better, and it really just depends on what you like and what you're eating at the time and what your experience is that day, the beer you want.
But I'm just wondering, do you see more of these IPAs, let's say, that are more nuanced?
There are more specific. There's a broader palette that you can paint from now. So there are more specific flavors that you can coax out of hops than you could before.
True.
Whereas bitterness is kind of a generic thing about hops. Every hop will give you bitterness to some degree. And with the amount of... Pardon me for saying this, but with the amount of money we're spending on hops these days, you really want to get the impact out of
it.
And it's not necessarily... the point of difference
it's
is...
not about bitterness.
Well, the point of difference is no longer so much about my beer's more bitter or less bitter than someone else's, but more...
I have a question for you. So last month, you made a beer at Threes. The Just Add Water IPA?
Yep.
So now
that was not an IPA, not at all.
It wasn't?
No.
It was called Just Add Water.
Yeah, that was, in fact, that was a Brettanomyces beer, not an IPA.
Okay.
But a hoppy beer.
Well, that's where I'm trying to get to, is I think that in my mind I've thought of hops, and I think a lot of listeners too, as bitter. So that beer you made, for example, I was trying to figure out, how do I detect the hop character, but it wasn't bitter? I think that's what I'm getting at.
So I think if I'm correct, I don't remember exactly because it was a long day, but I don't think we added more than a couple of ounces of hops to the boil, which...
What was the batch size?
They make 15 barrels at Threes. It's a beer we made at Threes. And it had a heavier load of Citra and Simcoe later on, a dry hopping. But we also used a lot of fresh fruit in it, mango, and then mango puree down the line too. So it was a, you know, tropical fruit style beer, but no, I don't think any brewer would call that an IPA. Mm. There, that said, there's not a very neat category to put mango, wheat, late hop, Brettanomyces beer, but it's part, I think, part of the evolution of,
I guess I just put it on the menu as a threes just at water IPA.
Well, it probably didn't last more than that day.
It was pretty good.
It was good, yeah.
Oh yeah, it's a really nice beer. Yeah. But, yeah, I was hoping we were there this afternoon. Yeah, I didn't. Yeah. They said they sold through it in 2 weeks. So
wow.
So
it was really popular. Yeah. Hey, we're gonna take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
All right.
Good one. All right, coming back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, check us out, heritageradionetwork.org. There's some great incentives to become a member. There's some really cool offerings there. But always check us out, heritageradionetwork.org. Pretty soon there's going to be a new website and a lot of new things going on. But we're going strong. We're almost at 300 shows on Beer Sessions Radio. And Ben Keen, Jeff O'Neill, and John Siegel have been part of them for quite a while. So nice to have you guys on.
Always a pleasure to be
here. So we're talking about the Hop Master, Hop Slave, Jeff O'Neill and his new brewery. And
what does that make John in this scenario?
I don't want to know.
Hop Overlord?
No. Him. We're partners. I refer to everyone that works with the Siegel Ranch as a partner.
Let's go for the next beer, the next hoppy beer. But we've had a nice conversation. We're talking about Jeff's new brewery, the Industrial Arts, that's opening upstate. And the difference between like hops, you know, and hops and, you know, bitterness, but like let's talk more about that. You know, what else can hops do? Because I still associate with like real hoppy West Coast bitter IPAs.
Well, I think even West Coast beers are trending more toward aroma. I mean, it's about aroma and it's about impact and freshness, and I think most people are starting to understand this, that when we're talking about any of these beers, it's freshness is totally important in a way that it's almost never been before with popular styles of beer, where, you know, there's such a big difference between one of these beers when they're a month old versus 3 months old.
There's a brewery, and I'm blanking on the name, in California, in the San Diego area, that's rather new, that you can sign up to this sort of membership program. And when they produce their newest IPA for this small community, they will deliver it to you on the same day.
Oh, wow.
Speaking to your point about freshness and this sort of, you know, clamoring for the beer as soon as it's ready to serve, that would be an extreme example of that.
But it's real. I mean, it's a real impact that diminishes in this style of beer, whether you are the most technologically advanced brewery in the country or a home brewer.
No,
it's ephemeral, and it's like keeping hop aroma in a beer at 90 days is like the holy grail.
It's really important. And I mean, look at Lagunitas. They built that huge brewery in Chicago. They built
the
brewery.
They're
building a third one. And they're also a very big partner at the Siegel Ranch. But they built that brewery for a couple of reasons. One, you have the whole trucking from Petaluma to New York is costing a fortune, and also it's not good for the environment. But also having a Chicago brewery obviously brings fresher beer to the New York area. And you'll notice that Lagunitas IPA is everywhere in the city. And it's a great, you know, roller coaster, a gold roller coaster, when you have fresh beer that's constantly churning and churning at all the establishments and in the stores.
John, which of you? Well, first, I totally agree with you, because just being local now, the other half, threes, and there's so many local breweries that they're selling their beers out the week they're made, and I'm selling them out within a week of getting them, and it's, you can't compete with that. But what's in Lagunitas IPA? Which of your hops?
So at times, because they're so big right now, you know, when I met Tony McGee in 2008, he was a 40,000, maybe a 50,000 barrel brewery. You know, I think last year they did, I don't know, almost 680,000 barrels, something like that. So it's been just meteoric growth for Tony and the folks at Lagunitas. Our Cascades, we sell a lot of Cascades to them. We sell a lot of CTZs and Centennial. So those are the three varieties that we and some Chinooks, actually. But this Cascades, there, we're big supplier.
You know, let's talk about hop profile and the beers that we know. So we had the New Belgium Ranger. And what hops are in that again?
So in the boil, I think, and I can call them later and I'll probably be corrected, but it's it's Simcoe, Centennial, and Cascade in the boil. And I think they dry hop, 100% they're dry hopping with Seagull Ranch High Oil Cascade.
They say Chinook Cascade and Simcoe on the label. I'm not trying to be the bad guy.
You can tell I didn't do my homework. So Chinook. There's no Centennial in there?
Not advertised on the label, at least.
Okay.
But that has a softer profile. It wasn't as bitter as some other IPAs.
Yeah, I think it's a very balanced IPA. I think the aromas are great, and I think I want to have more than one of them. I think it's a
And now we have the, we're drinking the West Coast Green Flash IPA.
I think this is an improved beer over when they launched it, too.
Oh, interesting.
I think this was the first time I tried it, I thought it was kind of a miss.
Must be the hops.
Yeah, it could be.
So the West Coast IPA from Green Flash, reading from the label again, is Simcoe, Columbus, Cascade, Centennial, and Citra. So five varieties.
And that's a double IPA. That's a double. So the alcohol's higher. And I it's a delicious glass of beer. I've always liked this beer. I think it's a great glass of beer.
But far more bitter.
Much more bitter, I think.
And then for Jeff, for the Peekskill Eastern Standard IPA, which was, for a lot of people in New York, their favorite IPA for a while.
Sure.
What are the hops in that?
So that's a Simcoe, Chinook, Cascade, dry hop was Centennial, Citra, Simcoe. Probably there would have been one or two other things in there at any time too.
Can never do anything better than you, man.
It's how you do it, man.
Yeah. So how,
it's
like,
not
tell us
what you put in it.
Industrial arts. It's like. I think we need to get like some serious, you know, homebrewers on here and talk to you because you got to. No, you don't want to. But
don't do that.
You know, Jeff is very innovative, and he's doing. I can tell you because we've talked. He's doing things with hops and raw materials that are really very interesting, and he's trying to bring out different nuances of all of his raw materials, especially hops, in ways. From a brewing process and post brewing that I think are going to be very interesting. And that's
I try to stay out of the way of a lot of these ingredients, right? Like,
right.
So many of these, you know.
A good chef really wants the product to stand out. And so I think that's kind of his, if I can speak for him, I think he's really looking to have industrial arts beers be representative of the high quality products, raw materials he's going
to
buy.
Expect them to be very expressive beers.
And with 4,000 breweries, is it not important that you are doing something that helps distinguish
industrial arts from the
other 4,000 pale ales out there or what have you? Yeah.
Well, I mean, at Peekskill with the cool ship, I mean, that was really a wonderful process.
Yeah.
Where
I learned a lot doing that.
You used the cool ship. You didn't put really very many hops in the kettle.
That was low tech.
Right.
That was
but
a
you
low
used
tech
the cool ship
doing,
as really as a way to hop your beers. You know, in the cool ship, not in the brew house. I mean,
which
this
is
really pumped up to the top floor.
That's
the brewery,
what I was thinking.
And that was just amazing to see.
You're getting it.
No one had ever done that. I never saw that before in a brewery. So that was pretty innovative. But a cool ship's not going to be at industrial arts. So he's moving.
I'm going to have actually more finite control over that stuff. And think I maybe stumbled upon something with this, but. There's a lot of aroma that gets driven out of hops, for better and worse, that I'm going to try to keep in the keg.
Sounds like you're working with a pressure cooker or something.
Well,
I don't want to blow your secrets.
That's a good analogy.
It actually is.
Yeah,
A little accurate. It's pretty accurate, actually.
Sure. And that's a part of fermentation as well. It's keeping, you know, even carbonating beer. It's a point at which you can kind of undo a lot of the hard work that you've done to really bring a
So I want to taste some of your test batches.
Well, that won't be too long. Yeah. I got a really nice pilot system that we're going to fire up pretty soon, and that's almost ready to go.
I'm going to give him some hops from last year.
Yep, I'll be out at Johns Ranch next month, we're going to send back some.
Let's talk about that. So you're going to go out to his ranch, and what's the experience that a brewer like Jeff gets by visiting your ranch? Besides trying to eat hops and choking.
Oh, like pork chops marinated in root beer.
you should come out one day, actually.
Oh, the best.
Oh, you guys
have
food there, too?
Oh, the best family barbecue ever. Yeah. Oh, the best Mexican barbecue in history.
So what we do, it started with Lagunitas.
That's the only reason I go is for the root beer.
For the root beer pork chops.
So it started with Lagunitas, and now it's kind of become created a monster. But basically, when you buy hops from us, you're certainly invited to come to the ranch for selection. It's like going to the farmer's market and picking out your own tomatoes, basically, right? And we do a really nice barbecue where we go to the local carniceria. We buy Mexican cuts of meat, all funky. And then Martin Ramos's mom will then set up her tortilla station.
Oh, those tortillas.
And she will make fresh tortillas
Jesus
in front
Christ.
Of you. And
Jeff's
just,
like in a reverie right now. Yeah,
they're just ridiculous. I mean,
and Jeff loves the Hudson Valley, but he really loves.
No, just amazing.
And then
We make two or three salsas from all the vegetables in our garden and the peppers we grow.
And there's usually like a case of fresh Pliny the
Elder. Yes, Vinny usually sends us like Temptation, a Supplication, and Pliny, and we're just sitting there. And basically, then I want to get the brewers drunk enough so then when they go to select the hops, they're going to be so happy anyway they'll take anything. So no, I'm just kidding.
You're like a wine merchant.
We have a great time.
You sell with cheese, and
right.
you know.
We have a great time, and then they get to select the lots what they want, and it's really it's nice to suddenly sit at a farm and select the hops you're going to use in your brewery.
The barbecue makes those bad news phone calls
to take. Yeah, when the crop is a bit short and we have to short you by 2% or something.
Like, remember those pork chops? And also, you're not getting what you wanted.
So we left you back in 1981.
We ate grasshoppers. Oh, Jesus, back we ate grasshoppers.
Yes, we started to get a little bit, you know, something fun for people to try. So last year we had fried grasshoppers in a spicy limon.
They were delicious.
And
they're
chilies.
Really
they're actually really great.
Yeah,
really
what are
great.
They? I've had them at a Mexican.
Future protein that's going to save the world.
It could. It absolutely could.
We know kids at 30 different countries that are cooking, you know, insects.
No,
but, John, quick one. Okay, so you gave me a good story. You're working at Anchor.
Yes.
Talk about how hops can grow. You're working at Anchor.
Yes.
And there was, an explosion, a Mount St. Helens explosion.
Oh, my God.
Tell us
that
story about your dad and what happened.
So, yeah, we thought we were out of business, honestly. So Mount St. Helens blows, and there's 3 feet of ash on the farm. And we really thought we were in serious trouble. So did the cherry growers and the apple growers and everyone else in the Yakima Valley. And it turns out that if you haven't been out, but when you step on the soil in the Yakima Valley, it's volcanic ash. I mean,
yeah,
that's literally
the soil.
It's very, very
walking on the moon.
Wild. So anyway, the best crop we ever had in the history of the Yakima Valley, at our ranch at least, was St. Helens this year, because all that volcanic ash just gave us a tremendous crop. But we certainly had to replace a lot of filters in the tractors and the trucks. But other than that,
the ash acts as like a fertilizer?
It's just incredible amount of nutrients in volcanic ash. It's the best thing you can put in soil, really. It's just remarkable.
So there should be more hop farms like on volcanic slopes.
Exactly.
One more anecdote.
On every one of them. Yeah. You can find it at the 43rd parallel, right?
Fast forward. So
35 to 55, yeah. What?
Fast forward, to 2000s. When did the next big leap happen for you guys? And name a couple of breweries that really...
Well, for us, his first meeting, Tony McGee, honestly, at Lagunitas. And then I went to CBC Boston, which was, I think, 2009. We had Anchor. We've always had Anchor as a partner. And we had no one else because we were an Anheuser-Busch grower. So I basically had to start from scratch. And through Anchor, I met Tony. And then that really has been a fantastic partnership. And then many of the other brewers I've met were through conventions and the Hop Quality Group, actually. Val Peacock introduced us to a number of people through the Hop Quality Group, which is a group of craft brewers who really care about the quality of hops and how hop farms are run and you know, cleanliness, all that stuff.
You cold-called me?
I called Jeff at Ithaca Brewing Company, came up and met you. Yeah. And he wasn't really very nice.
What made you break out?
He was very nice.
So before you,
you pork chops? That's the question.
Can I tell you what I did? Honestly, I actually Googled the top 40 craft breweries.
But before that, you had some larger breweries and you were selling to them.
We were an Anheuser-Busch grower for 35 years. And
so they bought all your hops?
They did, except for Anchor's. And we were the first farm to actually have Willamettes grown in Washington State for Anheuser-Busch. Anheuser-Busch had their experimental nursery was on the Siegel Ranch. So we were kind of like the showplace for AB back before InBev bought them. When InBev bought Anheuser-Busch, it really just changed the whole landscape of the brewing business, and AB is not AB as it is. So, we were a Willamette grower and a Cascade grower for AB. We were given 3 years really to sell our production. We were bought out of our contract for 3 years at half the contract price, and then basically from 2007 to 2010, we had to get ourselves back up to
build a new business
to farm 400 acres. Yeah. So that was my job, and at CBC Boston, I was literally walking around talking about the fact that we're the first farm to grow Cascades, which, of course, craft brewers have a wonderful passion for all things that are historic. That we had Anchor as a customer was certainly credibility, and then I'd also worked at a brewery, which I think also gave me some creds with some of the.
So then I give you a lot of credit for pulling back the curtain. Because it was really, kind of alluded to it earlier, like it was a trade that was dominated by brokers for my whole career until the last 5 years or so.
That's nice of you to say. And yeah, that was really the farmer direct
there
program.
There was no tete-a-tete brewer and grower. There was a significant and, I think, problematic disconnect.
This is amazing, and we're going to do the show again because we're just touching the surface. But to wrap it up, everyone just tell me a beer with hops that you would recommend that we didn't try tonight.
Oh, do we have to start with me? Let's just start with John, so I have a second
John,
to think.
One you didn't bring tonight.
As my father taught me, all beers are good and some are better, and that's where I'll leave it.
What was another beer that you were going to bring that you didn't?
Lagunitas IPA.
Okay, Jeff, what beer did you leave in the Uber?
Well, we left some other half beer in the Uber, and we had a beer there today that we talked about after we left, even, called Microgreens.
I tried that last week.
Yeah,
that's
and
delicious.
It had wonderful stuff. It had really enough balance to it.
So that's a good word, balance. You're looking for that.
It was a very hoppy beer, a very small beer, but it had a lot of balance, and it was really easy to drink, and we were thirsty as hell.
3.8 ABV. 3.8.
Ben?
So I used to live in Massachusetts, and Jimmy, you've got a soft spot. There's a brewery up there called Treehouse, and they've got a nice IPA called Julius that I would say.
And I'll tell you mine. Not too long ago, Peekskill Eastern Standard IPA was everybody's favorite IPA, and it still is great.
Oh, thanks.
But other half has kind of knocked people out with their bitter, hoppy IPAs.
And I think their beers skew toward bitterness.
But what you helped me understand on the show tonight is that I've become a big fan of threes, and I like their Here You Go, the Pale Ale, and they're not really...
They're not really
an IPA. They're not bitter, yet they have a certain amount of hops. So.
Well, a lot of character.
Yes.
And I think,
hop
like,
character.
And I think that's going to be the difference between, you know...
That's true.
Industrial... You know, people that are drinking industrial beer and transitioning into something that's not... They can still drink, like, you know, it's still beer that you can drink, but it's not going to...
The difference between industrial beer and industrial arts.
It'll be a big difference.
Yeah, you got me.
Well, I do like that we covered that a little bit, so hop character is kind of where we're going with now.
Yeah.
And you guys are great. And John, we learned about hop history, so we'll do another show like this another time. Events coming up, Pig Island, it's our annual event. 6 Points is the beer sponsor, pigisland.com, September 12th. Check it out. It's a great event, all about New York State ag and supporting New York farmers. I'd like to thank our sponsors at Union Beer Distributors, who helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Today's break music was provided by Knife Show, and the sponsor, thank you for, I'm reading these new notes. Thanks for listening and for tuning in. We'll catch you next time. What am I doing?
Show?
Ben, John, and Jeff, and for joining me here on the Heritage Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Maggie, and Justin. I'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Woo. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.